Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside. Repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Content warning: this episode contains discussion of murder and rape. It also includes some profanity.
Today, we continue our look at the life and career of Andy Baldwin, one of the two defense attorneys representing Richard Allen in the Delphi murder case. In the future, we'll be doing episodes on Brad Rosie, the other defense attorney, Prosecutor Nicholas McClelland, and Judge Fran Gull. It is our hope that these episodes will help us better know the people in the case, as well as help us all understand how the legal process works in Indiana.
This episode will focus largely on Andy's work in court. We'll hear about how he prepares, his courtroom style, and some of the cases he's worked on. The speakers will be Andy's peers, people who have worked with or against him in court. We will also hear from a woman whose husband was represented by Andy. That man was accused of murder, and just like in Delphi, there was a video of the alleged killer.
Tomorrow, we will tell the story of one particular case. It is the tale of Baldwin's team representing a young person accused of murder. That case came to a shocking conclusion that left many feeling outraged.
My name is Anya Kane. I'm a journalist.
And I'm Kevin Greenlee. I'm an attorney.
We first connected while looking into the Burger Chef murders, an Indiana cold case. Together, we built a spreadsheet documenting hundreds of cases of restaurant-related homicides. That original spreadsheet gave way to our podcast, The Murder Sheet.
Now we maintain that same research-centric, investigative approach as we look into all sorts of homicides, including unsolved cases, historical crimes, and, of course, restaurant murders.
We don't just chat about the headlines. Our podcast is a platform for our journalism. The Murder Sheet focuses on investigative reporting, thoughtful analysis, thorough research, and in-depth interviews. We're The Murder Sheet.
And this is The Delphi Murders. Andy Baldwin for the defense, part two, The Best I've Seen.
Andy Baldwin is now exclusively a criminal defense attorney. But that was not always the case. Here's Mitch Westerman, who worked as a legal assistant for Andy Baldwin.
And, you know, he did all sorts of law. He did, you know, he did family law. I think he did some civil stuff. But, you know, inevitably he was always saying how much the criminal stuff is the only stuff he really enjoyed.
Here's Johnson County, Indiana attorney Michael Auger.
He decided he's done with all of the civil stuff, and he was going to focus his attention on criminal trials and criminal work.
There were a few reasons why this may have surprised some people. For one, criminal defense work is hard. Here's Clark Waymire, who used to work in Andy Baldwin's office.
So I think, you know, criminal defense in general, it's tough. It requires long nights. It's not well paid. I'll tell you that. It's not like Andy or any of those other guys are living high on the hog. But you think about it, right? Most people accused of a crime aren't rolling in money.
On top of that, a lot of people have a very low opinion of criminal defense attorneys. But people in the legal system don't believe that is fair. Here is Brown County, Indiana prosecutor Ted Adams.
You know, a lot of people, I think, give defense attorneys a bad rap, and they ought not get one. I mean, everyone wants to trash on a defense attorney until you need one. You never know when the government is going to point the finger at you. And at that point, you've got to be courageous and defend your client against the government. And we ought to have defense attorneys. We need defense attorneys. We need defense attorneys to prevent the government from becoming all too powerful and pointing the finger at people without, you know, without any type of ramifications for what they're doing. They need to be held accountable, and they need to be held to a standard.
A passion to protect people's rights does motivate Andy's defense work.
You know, he very, very, very much in his soul believes innocent until proven guilty. Some of his passion is also just rooted in that and the fundamental rights that we get in America that are protected by the Constitution.
Some people were taken aback by the name Andy and his partners chose for their firm. They called themselves the Criminal Defense Team.
And I can remember there was some flack that he was taking just for the name, and people thought it was kind of hokey.
Here's Johnson County, Indiana prosecutor Lance Hamner.
I think it was surprising to everybody that a name like that would be forged, because it's just an uncommon way to do it. Names of the partners usually come out, or it'll be the name of the lawyer and associates, Jim Smith and Associates. So to call it the Criminal Defense Team was very unusual.
But there was a reason for the name.
Andy's big thing from the start was like, I don't like just working alone. I don't like being in an office. I like the collaboration. I like, you know, being able to go in this office and bump this off Mark, or go in and talk to Ted about, you know, I've got this case. You know, how should I talk to the prosecutor? What's your thought on this? And so he's super collaborative. And that goes just not for the other attorneys, but like paralegals and legal assistants that's worked with him, or the secretary. You know, he's just a big advocate of like getting everybody's opinion, good or bad.
Here's Heather Sida, who worked at the Criminal Defense Team.
Yeah, we were very, very close family, very close-knit, and everybody appreciated everybody's, you know, their specialties. And
especially on cases queuing up for trial, we would have brainstorming sessions, usually in the law library or Andy's office. And back when I did it with him, we'd have a large, you know, giant paper, you know, those giant papers that you flip up, and we just take notes. We'd pause it, and we would pose some defense theories, some theories of innocence. We'd work them with the staff, because we always considered our staff to be, you know, what a juror would hear. And we'd ask them, you know, forget everything you know about this case, and let's test out this defense.
He wasn't too proud to have someone look at the case. Like, I didn't go to law school. I'm in no way a trained lawyer, but he took my advice and other people's advice in the firm, and wasn't too proud to hear what someone else's take was if it meant getting the best outcome for his client.
Here's Johnson County attorney Carrie Miles.
It's an amazing place to work, because you know you're going to be surrounded with people that are passionate about trying cases and are good at it and aren't afraid to call each other out, and that makes a defense, you know, stronger. If someone on your team is willing to point out a weakness, and then the other people can figure out how to overcome that weakness, you get blind to your case. And many of us have fought with Andy about, I'm going to do this in closing, and no, Andy, don't do that. That's dumb. Like, that's going to come off a different way. There's this back and forth, and he does surround himself with people that are willing to tell him he's crazy, and he is crazy, but he's good. He's crazy good. He's not afraid to try stuff in the courtroom, and often his co-counsel or people that are helping him on the case will say, no, you're not doing this. I didn't participate in this one, but there was a shot glass trial where he was going to do something with a shot glass. And
we had a case, and it was a case involving, where the alleged victim, it was clear that the alleged victim had drank a lot of alcohol in this particular case. One of the themes throughout the case was the amount of alcohol that this alleged victim might have had throughout the evening. The case was, you know, it was far enough away from Franklin that we were staying the night in a hotel. And one of the things that that Andy and I discussed the night before closing arguments was we were trying to think of a way to really make the jury visualize like how much alcohol we were talking about here. And so Andy got the idea. He's like, why don't you go down to the hotel bar and see if you can get me? And I think that if you took all the statements together and the investigation and you kind of did the math on it all, it was something like 16 shots of alcohol that we were arguing that this is what was said here and this is what was said here. And if you match all that up, and that was drawn out through the cross-exam of the alleged victim in the case. And so Andy was like, well, why don't you go down and see if you can get like 16 shot glasses? And I'm going to, as I start my closing, I'm going to set them one at a time. I'm going to set them one at a time on the stand in front of the jury as I'm giving my, my closing, and I'm going to do it slowly. And he's like, I'm going to be a little theatric about it just so they see, look how many drinks we're talking about and everything. So I was all for it. So I did it. I went down and they gave me the glasses and everything.
Andy had a further request for Mitch, one that involved his co-counsel, Kathy Perry.
Andy told me, he's like, don't tell Kathy that I'm going to do this, 'cause I don't think she'll be on board with it. And I was like, okay. And so I said, that's fine. And so we get into court the next day, and I'm sitting with him and Kathy, and you know, you're sitting there and you're kind of vibing what's going on, and something about I can't remember right offhand, but I don't know if it was something, you know, I don't know if we started right away with closings or whatever that morning, but something happened where I was like, I don't like the shot glass thing anymore. So, I mean, I'm talking not very long at all. I mean, minutes before he was supposed to go. I leaned over to Kathy and I said, Kathy, he's going to do the shot glass thing. And she said, no, he's not. I said, yeah, he is. She's like, what do you mean? And I said, I have the shot glasses right here. And I pointed to him. She goes, no, he cannot do that. I don't feel good about it. And I was like, yeah, I kind of don't either. I was like, let's talk him out of it. So, I mean, he was literally going up and we grabbed him and we're like, Andy, don't do the shot glass thing. And he's like, what? We're like, don't do the shot glass thing. Just do your thing. You're good. You're good. And he's like, okay, I won't do it.
I witnessed a trial where it was a rape allegation. I didn't participate in the trial. I witnessed it. And part of the argument is that she was screaming through a door and there were other people there, and Andy was trying to cause the jurors to understand that if she was screaming, people would have heard her. So he had one of his attorneys at the time or a law clerk or someone go out in the hall of the courtroom and on some kind of cue start screaming like, help, don't, stop, in just some obnoxious, crazy way. And everybody was like, that was ridiculous, Andy. But it made a point. It's hard because we're on a podcast here, but he's got big trial balls. I mean, he is not afraid to, he's not crossing the line. He didn't do anything wrong there. But for those of us that are a little more conservative in our approach, we're like, yeah, Andy, maybe that's a little much. It's not, because it's relevant. And here's why it's relevant. I mean, he'll fight you down on that stuff, but he'll also listen to those around him. That shot glass thing got nixed. And it was because he listened to somebody that he respected around him. I don't remember the story, but he does listen.
Andy is passionate about his work and puts in long hours at his office. Carrie learned this firsthand when she went to work for the criminal defense team.
The day that I started, I think, you know, my parents raised me as someone that when you do a job, you don't half-ass it, you know, show up early, stay late, work hard. And I knew Andy knew that about me already, just from the years that he'd been around me practicing. But there was something about, you know, Andy is taking me on now. He's going to give me a paycheck. And I'm not just his friend. I'm someone that is employed by him. So I got to the office very early that morning, and I had an upstairs office. And I don't think Andy expected anyone to be in the building. My upstairs office was between the upstairs bathroom where the shower was located and his office that he also lived in when he stayed there. I was sitting at my desk trying to figure out what time everyone was going to get there and, you know, just get my bearings and get organized. And Baldwin walks around the corner from the shower. Oh, yeah, you guessed it. At least he was wrapped in a towel. He had a towel around his waist. And mind you, we'd known each other for 20-some years, and he's like a brother to me. And he paused, and I paused, and we had a, oh, hi moment. And, you know, he was embarrassed, and that really lasted for just like a second, because then we just started talking about, hey, I think I'm going to put you on the such-and-such case. Literally, he stayed there with the towel wrapped around his waist. I forgot about that because we started talking about a case. And then there was a moment where he realized, like, oh, I should probably go. I don't. And I probably made some really rude comment about, yeah, I don't want to see your junk or something. And then he went off and got dressed.
At The Murder Sheet, we're all about immersive audio experiences.
That's why we love Audible. An Audible subscription gives you access to thousands of audiobook titles. We especially enjoy their robust selection of mysteries, thrillers, and true crime.
I love Audible. I've really enjoyed listening to A Wicked Snow by Greg Olson. This story is all about a CSI investigator with a dark past and a terrible family secret. When I'm listening to Audible, it plunks me right down in the middle of the story. It's so spine-tingling that I can practically feel the cold air on my skin. Audible is your one-stop destination for thrillers and mysteries. Just be prepared to get spooked in the best possible way.
Listening to audiobooks offers a wonderful respite from the day. Audible allows you to listen on the go. I love taking a walk or a drive and just getting lost in a story. My favorite audiobook on Audible so far is Presumed Innocent, the book track edition. This classic legal thriller by Scott Turow is enhanced by a gripping musical soundtrack that amplifies the story's suspense and profound emotional beats.
As a new member, you can try out Audible for free for 30 days. This is such a valuable membership, and you get access to so many new listening experiences, including podcasts, Audible originals, and Audible exclusives like the Words Plus Music series.
Visit audible.com/msheet or text msheet to 500-500. A weight loss journey can feel like a lonely struggle, But it doesn't have to be.
For so many of us, lifestyle changes, like deciding to lose weight, adopting a nutritious diet, and taking up fun exercises, are all about putting our own health and wellness first. But it can be really hard to know where to begin or how to keep the weight off once we've seen some progress. Quick fixes like soup diets and juice cleanses are unsustainable. There's a much better way to embark on this journey that over 200,000 people have already chosen. We're talking about the Ro Body program.
Here's how it works. Ro gives you access to one of the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Their Ro Body program then sets up a comprehensive weight loss program tailored to your specific lifestyle, health status, and goals. In addition to the weekly shot, you get one-on-one coaching with a registered nurse that can help you adopt and stick with lifestyle changes like exercise routines and nutritious diets. It's a comprehensive program that sees participants lose 15 to 20% of their weight in a year on average. But the real benefit is that you keep that weight off. This is weight loss at its most sustainable.
With Ro, the average weight loss is 15 to 20% of your weight in 1 year, in conjunction with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to ro.co/msheet. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. Go to ro.co/msheet. That's ro.co/msheet.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So, what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
When it comes to actual trials, Andy Baldwin has a perspective that is not necessarily shared by every lawyer.
Most lawyers say that, your opening statement really isn't worth anything.
I hate an opening statement. Andy and I would go round and round about that because he is adamant that an opening statement could make or break a case. I'm like, dude, it's a statement. You're not even allowed to argue. You have to say what you think the facts are going to be. And he says, that's how you tell the story to the jury. And if they believe in your story and they trust you as the evidence comes out and it comes out to match your story, you're going to win. He's probably right, but I hate opening.
His openings are bar none the best I've seen from the defense bar. And as a prosecutor, I've tried dozens of cases. I've seen many, many different defense attorneys, gone up against many defense attorneys, and by far his opening statements are the best. He has a theme. He'll stick with it. He'll pound. He communicates like no other to a jury. And he's such a personable, because we picked a jury, and so the jury will have spent hours with both of us and with Andy, and he's personable, and he'll have built a rapport with them. And now he's going to go up and give a theme. And he's going to deliver, he's going, we're promising, hey, this is what we're going to show you. You're writing that check, and you try to get the jury interested, and that check's going to be cashed. And so he's a master at giving an excellent opening with a theme, and then promising the jury something that they're going to want to be listening for and be listening for, and then can check off their list. Because that builds rapport, it builds trust. And again, as a defense attorney, you're always thinking there's some distrust there. They think I'm going to come up here and work on, give them some shenanigans and some smoke and mirrors. Andy never comes across that way. He's authentic and genuine. And the jury he'll have built that rapport with the jury so that when he gives that opening with the theme, and he makes those promises, if you will, writes those checks, they're going to be satisfied that he comes through on whatever he's told them he's going to come through on. He'll also, one of his things that he's taught me to do, I like to bait them on a surprise because you want some anticipation. You want them, our concerns, your jury's going to fall asleep or get bored. You want them to anticipate some things. So you want to promise them some surprises. Hey, I want you, ladies and gentlemen, I want you to, you know, pay attention. What happens when I ask this of this witness? Something that's anticipatory.
And I just came back here to work at the prosecutor's office under the new administration. I came back here a little early in November. So what is this, March? I've been back a few months. And last week was my first jury trial here. And in honor of Andy Baldwin, I tried the case with another lawyer and I said, I'm taking the opening. And not because I wanted to, but because I heard this little bird in my head. Andy Baldwin says the opening is where you tell the story. And prosecutors are classically not good storytellers. They're more methodical and mechanical. And because I come mainly from the defense side, I decided, okay, I'm going to do the Andy Baldwin. And I sent him a text. I'm doing the freaking opening because of you. I don't enjoy opening. But yes, yes. And it's rubbed off, apparently, because I did it.
How did it go for you?
We won. I don't know if it was because of my opening, though. I really don't.
Andy also has an unusual approach to preparing for cross-examinations.
I espouse to a lot of Andy's trial prep. You talked about the chapters and the chapter seeds. Has anybody filled you in on his way of preparation where...
A little bit. We'd love to hear more.
So... I wasn't there when the chapter seeds were born. That's another colleague and friend of ours, Mitch.
We asked Mitch to explain the chapter method.
You know, it literally just starts on a very smaller scale. I mean, he actually calls it the chapter seeds, where, you know, there are these seeds of thought that, okay, whatever the issue might be, and we're talking about you're taking the case as a whole and you're breaking it down into these little moments or thoughts. And, you know, those are the seeds. And then from the seeds grow the individual chapters. And so, you know, as the process goes down the line, you know, he might at the very beginning, he might have, oh gosh, you know, 50, 100 chapters, depending on, and I'm talking like this might be specific to, say, the lead detective of a case. So he knows he has to cross-examine this lead detective. He might have 100 different chapter seeds, and then he'll organize those into individual chapters to where, you know, he'll have at the end, maybe he'll pare that down to 40 or 50. And he literally writes, you know, he writes the head of the chapter on a sheet of paper at the top. And then those are his chapters. And he organizes those literally one on top of another. You know, if it's the day of the cross-exam, he organizes them in the way that he thinks he's going to actually physically do the cross-exam. And then depending on how the direct examination goes. That's why I love his method, because it's so able to be thought of, you know, on the fly. So if the prosecution is really hammering something in direct exam, or the lead detective says something, you know, Andy can find that chapter, write what they said, and then he can. And so it's kind of interesting if you watch him in a trial, you know. He's literally sitting there at the table, and he'll be shuffling his papers around, and he's literally on the fly, like adjusting his cross-examination in real time.
When you prep a trial with him, or when you sit next to him at a trial, there's the mad scientist look. His yellow papers are all over the place. He knows where they are. He knows what they say. And he knows how to arrange them.
Since Andy does not have a formal outline for his cross-examinations, he can be far more flexible than other attorneys. If most attorneys approach their cross-examinations like an outlined novel, Andy seems to see them more as a choose-your-own-adventure story. This can result in him taking courses others just don't see coming.
And there was a case, this was in Johnson County, actually, I believe, he even during opening said, look, I'm going to attack this police officer. I'm going to go after him. And so if you don't think that you can be on a jury where I'm going to go after this guy, Please tell me. And he set it up from the day before. Like, I think this was a horrible investigation and I'm going to attack this guy when he gets on the stand.
And Andy spent days getting his cross-examination ready.
The next day comes, the officer takes the stand and Andy says, if you just admit right now that you conducted a horrible investigation and you screwed up the case, I will sit down and not ask you any more questions.
The guy was like, yeah, I messed it up. I messed it up badly. And Andy sat down.
He sat right back down. Andy rested. And as you can probably guess, right, our client was found not guilty.
We've talked about trial preparation and what Andy's peers think of him. But let's look at things from a different perspective. Here's Ashley Hubbard.
So my husband was accused of murder. I really don't believe that he did it. He says he didn't do it.
Ashley's husband, Michael, was accused of setting a man named Robert Head on fire inside of a vehicle. There was a video showing a man getting out of the vehicle just before the fire began. Police believed that man was Michael. He was then charged with murder.
He got a court-appointed attorney, and the court-appointed attorney pretty much just wanted him to take an 18-year plea and say that he did it. And I wasn't okay with that, and he wasn't okay with it. The court-appointed attorney had no interest in even looking into anything. I felt like he pretty much went and had lunch, so to say, with the prosecutor, and they were like, oh, yeah, it's him. He did it. We're going to get a plea out of him, and we're going to go with that. I kind of feel like because we're from a small town in North Vernon, and my husband and myself don't have the best past, but we've been doing good for years and we don't have the greatest reputation. And I felt like they didn't want to look into it. In my opinion, they're all friends around here. I felt like he just wanted to close this case and get it over with. So I went on the hunt for a better lawyer, and actually a friend of mine told me about Andy. And when I called him, he looked into the case and he thought it was interesting. He looked into everything. He done interviews. He contacted witnesses. Anybody that I felt like he needed to speak to, he would speak to them. Any kind of evidence that I felt like I had, I could give to him. And he would say, we can use this. We can't use this. This is good. This is not so good. I mean, he kept in contact with me. He gave me a lot of hope, honestly, because my husband was looking at life without parole.
Andy worked the case hard. He started finding problems with the evidence against Michael.
He pointed out a lot of things that I was trying to tell the court-appointed attorney, like little things. Like there was a video, for instance, in my husband's case that was not a very good picture. You could not say that this is or isn't anybody. And they were just like, well, that person has a beard, so that has to be him. And the court-appointed attorney wasn't going to look into it any further. And I watched that video numerous times, and like me, I've been with my husband for 15 years, and I know that my husband doesn't leave the house without a hat on. Like, he's balding, and he's very self-conscious about that, and that was one of the biggest things that I noticed in that video, is that the person in that video didn't have a hat on. Now, you couldn't make out any tattoos or any good facial, like, you couldn't really say that this is or isn't anybody. But that person didn't have a hat on. And Andy Baldwin believed me. And he really fought for us.
The prosecution offered a deal.
We did end up taking a plea deal. Because if we would have went to trial and something did go wrong, it would have been a life without parole. And taking a plea deal, he can be home in a year with us and move on with our life. That was not Andy's choice. That was our choice. He wanted to take it to trial, and sometimes I regret us making that decision, because I do believe that we could have beat it, but having kids so small and not having the best reputation in this town, and it was a risk, and it was just not worth the risk to me.
Now that we know more about how Andy works in court, and even what his clients think of him, we will wrap up our series of episodes on him tomorrow with a look at one of the more controversial cases he has been involved with in recent years. It involves one teen killing another, and it ended up being adjudicated in a way that left many feeling shocked.
Thanks so much to everyone who talked to us for this episode.
Thanks so much for listening to The Murder Sheet. If you have a tip concerning one of the cases we cover, please email us at murdersheet@gmail.com. If you have actionable information about an unsolved crime, please report it to the appropriate authorities.
If you're interested in joining our Patreon, that's available at www.patreon.com/murdersheet. If you want to tip us a bit of money for records requests, you can do so at www.buymeacoffee.com/murdersheet. We very much appreciate any support.
Special thanks to Kevin Tyler Greenlee, who composed the music for The Murder Sheet, and who you can find on the web at kevintg.com.
If you're looking to talk with other listeners about a case we've covered, you can join the Murder Sheet discussion group on Facebook. We mostly focus our time on research and reporting, so we're not on social media much. We do try to check our email account, but we ask for patience as we often receive a lot of messages. Thanks again for listening.